Blog Talk Radio.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
For African people, nothing important happens without a libation. And so for this very important presentation, we begin by the pouring of libation. We pour libation first to our first ancestor, to that hidden one who, though hidden, manifests in all things as all things, that God-goddess idea in the universe by any and all names. To our first ancestor, we pour libation, Ashe. We pour libation too to our ancestors because they were the first people on this planet, mothers and fathers of all mankind, flashpoint of the human family. To those ancestors we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to our ancestors because they were the ones who first gave birth to the idea of civilization, knew we would need a form of governance, and they nurtured that idea along the Nile until it reached its zenith in Temet. There they built these gigantic monuments as evidence of that great civilization. And they carved instructions on the walls of temples and tombs for us, so we would never forget. To those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to our ancestors, because over time they put together all the tenets of civilization, and they took those ideas and left the continent. They were the people of the first Exodus. They left Africa and went all over the world and peopled the world. To those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. We pour libation too to our ancestors because they did not sit on their laurels. They continued to improve, continued to evolve, and at each point of evolution, they again would leave the continent and settle and resettle the planet. They met themselves coming and going. To those ancestors, we pour libation. Ashe. Pour libation too to those ancestors because over time, they found themselves the object of a forced exodus. When they were kidnapped, shackled, cargoed, shipped out of Africa and enslaved in diasporas around the world. To those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to the ancestors left at home, the very young, the aged, the infirm, left to reinvent themselves, depleted of us, human resources. But they were enjoined by us in the diasporas, both objects of a global miasma that ruptured the soul of a people as it ravaged a continent. To those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to those ancestors because over time, they began to remember who and what they were. Because no matter where they had been dropped off, they still retained bits and pieces of who and what they were. They retained that African core that describes them. They began to remember bits and pieces of a song. They began to remember lines from a rhythm. They began to remember dances that they did in ancient times. They began to remember those ancient drum beats that they now beat out on bare skin. And so to those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to them because they then began to teach each other. They began to resurrect and reconstruct that history and that culture. They became the new Africans wherever they were. They became the new teachers, preachers, archaeologists, the new singers, dancers, the new drummers, the new Jaliyah. They reconstructed that history and our culture and became new Africans everywhere. So to those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation to those ancestors because they are the ones who passed that information on to us. And so we pour libation to those of you who will watch this presentation, those of you who are the recipients of that pieced together history, of that reconstructed culture. To you, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to our children and those yet to be born, for they are the ones that you must teach, and you can only teach if you know the history. So to you who are learning the history and are passing on that history, and to our children who are learning that history and will pass that history on to all eternity, but they will call your name in all eternity. To our children, we pour libation. Ashe. Ashe. Asheo.
Last night I had a dream. When I got to Africa, I had one hell of a rumble. I had to beat Tarzan's behind first for claiming to be the king in the jungle. For this fight, I've wrestled with alligators. I've tussled with a whale. I done handcuffed lightning and put thunder in jail. You know I'm bad. I have murdered a rock. I injured a stone and I hospitalized a brick. I'm so bad I make medicine sick. I'm so fast, man, I can run through a hurricane and don't get wet. When Joy Fuller meets me, he'll pay his debt. I can drown a drink of water and kill a dead tree. Wait till you see Muhammad Ali.
The face of truth is open. The eyes of truth are bright. The lips of truth are ever closed. And the head of truth is upright. The breath of truth stands forward. The gaze of truth is straight. Truth has neither fear nor doubt. Truth has patience to wait. The words of truth are touching. The voice of truth is deep. The law of truth is simple. All you sow, you reap. The soul of truth is flaming, the heart of truth is warm, the mind of truth is clear and firm through rain and storm. Facts are only its shadow. Truth stands above all sin. Great be the battle of life. Truth in the end shall win. Life of truth is eternal. Immortal is its past. Power of truth shall endure. Truth shall hold to the last.
This is the legend of Muhammad Ali, the prettiest fighter there ever will be. He talks a great deal, he brags indeed, of a powerful punch and blinding speed. The fistic world was dull and wearied. With a champ like Foreman, things had to be dreary. Now someone with color, someone with dash, he brings fight fans a running with cash. This brash young boxer is something to see, and the heavyweight championship is his destiny. Ali fights great. He's got speed and endurance. If you sign to fight him, increase your insurance. Ali's got a left. Ali's got a right. If he hits you once, you're asleep for the night. And as you lie on the floor while the ref counts 10, you better hope and pray you don't meet me again. For I'm the man this poem is about. The true champion of the world, there isn't a doubt. Once I predicted and I knew the score. I told them I'd be champ of the world in 64. When I say three, they go in the third. Don't bet against me, I'm a man of my word. Do you remember when I predicted Sonny Liston's dismemberment? I hit him so hard, he forgot where October and November went. If I tell you a mosquito could pull a plow, don't ask how, hitch him up.
I like for them to say he took a few cups of love. He took one tablespoon of patience, one teaspoon of generosity, one pint of kindness. He took one quart of laughter, one pinch of concern, and then he mixed willingness with happiness. He added lots of faith, and he stirred it up well. Then he spread it over a span of a lifetime, and he served it to each and every deserving person.
are listening to Warriors Way Radio, where their motto is continuing the fight. Your host is Brother Kwasi Kraft. Warriors Way Radio is an affiliate of the Sankofa Historical Society, which is a part of the Black Reality Think Tank. And they are operating on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Check them out. Email them at warriorsway101@gmail.com. All of our programs are archived. Just go to www.blogtalkradio.com, go to the search portal, put in the Sankofa Historical Society, and check out any of our programs that are there. They air every Thursday evening at 6 o'clock. Warriors Way Radio, continuing the fight.
Hotep family, this is your brother Kwasi Shuja Kwatu Kraft, your warrior for the people. So thankful to be here, to be woken up another day in the breath of life, and I'm just so thankful for relationships that I've had with so many people that are here now and our ancestors, and just learning about them as, you know, we're going this journey. Today, conversation, we're going to talk about witnessing a crime and your responsibility. I'm thinking about that for a number of different reasons, but there was something that happened, I believe it was October 13th in 2021 in Philadelphia, where a young lady was on the train. She was a guy kind of was bothering her, and there were several people on the train. And during that time, she was backing away from him, and then he just ripped her clothes off. And then he continued ripping her clothes off, and then he raped her on the train. There were, you know, more than a half a dozen people on the train. They did nothing. They didn't even call for help, 911 or anything. In some of the video that the police have, they had made a comment that they think that some of the people were videotaping what was going on. And sometimes when a crime is being committed and you have, and you're able to help, sometimes you can, in some states, you can be held party too, because you did nothing to help, but you were in a situation where you could have. And just to take it a little bit further, this guy did not have a weapon, did not bear a weapon or anything like that. And he was a lone person. And again, there were several people on this train when this young lady was raped. But, I mean, this is not the first time that something has happened like this, but what kind of society are we living in? People can just sit and watch things happen, and, you know, first thing they do is pull out their phone and videotape it. Nobody's going to assist somebody in these situations. I mean, we do hear about people being heroic and helping out in these situations, but again, for something like this, and one of the thoughts that I have in regards to this is they never mentioned the identity of the late, the subject. The suspect in the matter, he was a black male, and they gave his name, and he was 35 years old, and I believe he was married, but he was a homeless person. And he, was being protected from being deported because he was charged prior to this incident on a misdemeanor on a sex abuse incident, I think back in 2017. And because it was a minor offense, it was ruled a misdemeanor. He wasn't deported. So now you have this situation, and he was arrested, and then he was later released, you know, after a short period of time. I think they might have indicated 4 hours. And the young lady was taken to a hospital. Now, again, they did not give the young lady's information. I don't know if she was black or white, but I'm taking a guess. And I'm going to take a guess and say that this was a black female. This was a black male. And I think that we have been desensitized to the trauma that goes and happens with black people. So, and I know that just when I talk about different things, incidents that go on where people just don't seem to have that concern about something that happens to someone black or brown. They just feel that it was something that we probably did to get somebody to do something to us, especially if it happened to be law enforcement. And that's just more or less has been the attitude. And so, but again, that information wasn't released, so I'm not sure who that person is. But I'm going to do an ancestral profile. It's going to be a little different, I think. This one, I'm going to do it on Trayvon Martin. And the reason I kind of picked Trayvon Martin because, you know, I have a young son, and he's older now. But, you know, at this time, Trayvon Martin, and for those of you that may not know, and that sparked that national movement in regards to Black Lives Matter, but Trayvon Martin was an unarmed American, 17-year-old, that was killed by George Zimmerman on February 26, 2012, sparking a national controversy. Now, Trayvon Martin had no criminal record when he was shot and killed by the Neighborhood Watch member, George Zimmerman, on February 26, 2012 in Sanford, Florida. Now, Zimmerman's initial release and later arrest sparked a national debate over racial profiling, the role that an armed neighborhood watch member in law enforcement. On July 13, 2013, a jury acquitted Zimmerman of murder. The Trayvon Martin Foundation was established in 2012, with thousands have taken the streets of America to protest the circumstances surrounding the teen's death. Now, in the early life of Trayvon Benjamin Martin, he was born in Florida on February 5th, 1995. His parents, Sabrina Fulton and Tracy Martin, divorced 4 years later, but Martin attended public schools in Florida, including Dr. Michael M. Kopp High School in Miami Gardens, with parents that wanted to expose him to the world. Now, Martin had experience that includes skiing, horseback riding, and a trip to New York to take the sights of the city. Now, at Carroll High School, where Martin went to school before prom, the youngster took an English honors class, though his favorite subject was said to be math. Tall and athletic, inclined with tattoos of family members' names on his frame, and the often quiet Martin was highly interested in studying aviation and potentially becoming a pilot. Yet he also started to have some problems in school. But again, in his death, in late February 2012, Martin spent his third high school suspension visiting his father, whom he was close to, and his father's fiance, Brandy Green. Now, Green's home is a gated community, the retreat at Twin Lakes in Sanford, Florida. are in response to a rash of robberies, burglaries. The residents in the community established a neighborhood watch in September of 2011. Now, Zimmerman, one of the residents, was selected as the program coordinator. Now, he regularly patrolled the street and was licensed to carry a firearm, and from August 2011 to February 2012. Now, Zimmerman had called the police several times to state that he had seen some individuals who he deemed as suspicious. All of the reported figures were all black males. Now, on the evening of February 26th, Zimmerman saw Martin, who had left the house to purchase Skittles and iced tea. Now, from the SUV, Zimmerman called the police department at 7:11 p.m. to report a suspicious guy, Martin, walking between the homes and starting to run. The dispatcher told Zimmerman, not to get out the car and follow Martin, with Zimmerman disregarding the instructions and pursuing the team. Now, later released the video footage of Martin shopping at the 7-Eleven, showed no criminal actions or aggressions or anything like that. There was some conversation because Martin was on the phone talking to his girlfriend, and she did not want her name to be released, but he was saying that somebody's following. And then all of a sudden, she heard a struggle. And then moments later, the neighbors called because they heard a shot fired. Zimmerman was seen. He had a small laceration on the back of his head, and they said his eyes were black. Well, I saw the pictures of the incident and of the day, and when you hit the back of your head, both eyes were black. So I think that's what the cause was. But like I said, that, it looked worse days later, and I think they posted some pictures of it later on. They also indicated that he did have a broken nose. So Zimmerman, in this situation, he pursued Trayvon Martin and initiated confrontation and had a gun. And there was a police officer that investigated the matter, and they did talk to Zimmerman the night of the shooting. And they didn't find any reason to hold him criminally. So after they talked to him and they kept him in custody for 4 hours, they released him that night. And so you have a dead black young man. Future was wiped out. I believe he has a younger brother. His mother will not see her son again. And the father, had called that night and called the police, indicating that his son was missing, thinking that his son, something happened to his son because he had left and went to the store, and, it's been quite some time. And then the police asked him to give a description of his son, and then they found out that he was that person that was shot and killed. Now, imagine, you sit in, your kid goes to the store, and somebody confronts him, and he was confronted, and this person had a gun, neighborhood watch person, and he shot and killed Trayvon Martin. And Zimmerman claims that it was self-defense, and the courts supported his statement, and Zimmerman was acquitted of charges. And again, that sparked the Black Lives movement and protests all over the country. And there were just so many movements sparked by this. But again, it's a common scenario that we're witnessing. And, one of the things that they always try to do is they always try to assassinate the character of the black male that was involved. And so basically they, a lot of people were saying, well, he was a thug, and he was a thug basically because he had a hoodie over his head. And so again, the stereotyping and And Zimmerman was told by the police dispatcher not to pursue him, not to get out of his vehicle. And he disregarded that. And again, so they showed he initiated something. But again, your gun rights activists are a big part of, and Florida is one of those states where, you know, some of the most horrific things happen to black and brown people, and where they're shot and killed, and it continues. And so in that situation, you know, it hurts me to just think about a life taken like that, the potential of the individuals, the relationships that a person has with the family. And this is a continuous thing. It continuously goes on. You know, I was reading about something the other day where the police responded to a call in Ohio. My son used to go to school there, where a black male adult, you know, in his 30s was in the garage working on something, and the police came there on a noise complaint and told him to put his hands up, and he puts his hands up, and they see a cell phone in his hand, and they shoot him, and they kill him. There was another incident on New Year's Day in Ohio where a father is shooting off fireworks, and this is a common thing in Ohio. I'm not saying that it's legal, but in this neighborhood, this is what goes on. The police know that people take their firearms and they shoot up in the air on, you know, at New Year's. And this guy was doing that. He was behind the fence in his yard, and the police officer didn't even see the person. He just heard the shot and shot through a fence, so he couldn't hit anybody. You know, and in law enforcement, you're supposed to have target acquisition and so forth and this and that before you do anything. But the police officer also knew that he was in a black neighborhood, and he could care less about the people that lived there, so it didn't matter who he shot. And so, so you're looking at that situation right now. And so far, you know, no charges have been brought up against this officer. But again, this is a common scenario that we deal with. And people have been so desensitized as to the trauma and hurt and pain that we deal with on a daily basis that they seem to not care less, or that we did something to create these situations. And I'm going to talk a little more about George Zimmerman, and I want to bring that up because right after the shooting, he was invited on the Fox network. I think it was Sean Hannity, where he talked about his incident and everything he went through with the shooting of Trayvon Martin, and they were supporting Zimmerman in the sense that he had the right to carry arms, and he was looking out for the welfare of the neighborhood because he was a block watch captain. He was a self-appointed captain, that should be also noted. He was not one of those people that the police said, hey, this is what we want you to do. No, that wasn't the case. But the other thing that happened was the gun that he shot and killed Trayvon Martin with, he auctioned that off. And when he auctioned that off, you know, he had thousands of people that wanted to buy that gun. And there was a lady that wanted to buy the gun for her son. She thought that would be a good present for her son, her, I think, 15 or 16-year-old son. She wanted to get that for him. And the price, I think, that he had negotiated with her was about $150,000. But he did not let the gun go for $150,000. Somebody else made him another offer, and he sold that gun for $250,000. And then he said he was going to donate some of that money to police defense and brutality and violence against police. And so, and Ben Crump happened to be the attorney for the Martin family. And he said that that was appalling and outrageous that, you know, he could sell a gun that he killed a young black man with and profit like that. And the fact that he got all those offers, it just tells you about the society that we're living in, and it doesn't look like things are going to get better. I'm going to talk about the topic tonight when I mentioned about the rape that happened on the train. This was in Philadelphia. And when this incident took place, there were several people on the train. And one of the things that I did when I looked at this story, and I saw that there were people were said to have been videotaping the incident. And they could have called 911, but they didn't do it. And so you're like, why? Why is that? You know, why is it that people can't, and then why wouldn't people get involved? You know, and so when you look at the incident, and there was a police chief that he was appalled that, you know, all these people had to do was someone had could have called 911 and they didn't. And one of the program monitors on the train was looking and was able to see, monitoring the cameras, and they saw what was taking place, and they called 911. So for all the people that were on the bus, you know, none of them had called. And so a man was charged with raping the woman on the train. And like I said, this was in on the Philadelphia train. And, you know, it was just one of those things where you don't want to believe this kind of thing is happening. And, you know, and they say that there's a reason why a lot of people probably didn't get involved. And they say, from a psychiatrist's point of view, because they question psychiatrists, and they're saying, you know, you got all these people on this train. This guy attacked this girl on the bus. First, he sat next to her and, you know, he started talking to her, and she started backing away, and then he just started tearing her clothes off and raped her. And so they said one of the things is, one, people don't want to get involved because they're afraid of retaliation, and two, they're thinking that somebody else is going to do something, so they don't do anything. And now, Philadelphia happens to be one of those states, and I don't know if you guys understand what the Good Samaritan law is, but they don't have a Good Samaritan law in Philadelphia. And the guy that raped the lady, his name was Fiston Ngoy. Fiston Ngoy. He was a 35-year-old black male. And like I said, they did not give information of the victim, and I'm thinking, like I said, for the simple fact that she was raped on a train and people could stand by and do nothing. And I said, I'm believing that it was probably a black female because of the way people are so desensitized to the trauma that happens to the black and brown people. So I don't think that that was a white female or Asian or female that happened to. And it's sad to say that we can almost point out what the victim looks like in some of these situations, you know, based on what happens sometimes and why people don't do anything. And like I said, That's just my feelings right now, and I could be totally wrong, but that's just how I feel. And but let me just tell you some things about what happened with this young man, this Tristan Ngoi. Now, he had a criminal record. Now, he was released after the rape of the woman from the train, and he was sent to immigration, but they never kept him. I mean, they never deported him. Okay, they put him in detention for a while, but he was released. Now, he did have a prior sexual abuse charge against him, but it was a misdemeanor, and he was a student. And since 2012, and he lost his visa because he was no longer a student, and but he wasn't deported because immigration said that you know, they had passed some new laws that made it illegal to deport him for no longer being a student. So he was able to stay. And so, and now I believe that might have been 2015. And but again, like I said, he was arrested on a sexual abuse charge, and it was a misdemeanor. And that's one of the only other reasons why he wasn't deported when that happened, because it was a misdemeanor. He did serve 120 days in prison, 9 months on probation. And he was a homeless man, but they did say he did have a wife and kids. But at some point, you know, he lost his way and was no longer with his family. And so you look at the violence that takes place on the streets, in the homes of people, and how do you defend that? And what type of situation, you know, you think that you can walk into a grocery store and somebody starts shooting? You know, we have all this violence that's going on. We've had a number of shootings in the workplace, but we have the active shooters. And now you find that they have security in a lot of the workplaces. I know that for some of the reasons, because I work at some of these places, and they call me in to work security because some employee got upset because they got terminated and they threatened to harm other employees. So they asked for armed people to come in and be that support just in case something bad happens. Now, the news people on this incident of the young lady that had got raped on the train had made reference indicating that why they believe this type of incident took place. And the anchor person from the news station in Philadelphia indicated that the lack of police that are out there on the streets and homeless people, the number of homeless people that are on the streets, and she also indicated that defunding the police is also part of the problem. And so I thought it was interesting that a news anchor person would say something like that, because I think that is, you know, that's a personal preference, and but they get to do that, and they get to write and make their own narrative and frame things the way they want to frame it. And that's what we get when we get this information. And so what do you do? I mean, is it a crime to sit there and watch somebody sexually assaulted? You know, they say that there was an incident with some NFL players. I think there was one on the Los Angeles Raiders. several years. I think that was in 1984. But long and short of it, that there was a rape of a young lady, and some people witnessed it, and they were charged with a misdemeanor because they didn't do anything, didn't call anybody, and then later that charge was dropped. And so one of the things that they say that it's very hard to pursue charges against people for trying to get them to testify for something that happened. It's hard for them to arrest you under those circumstances. And so I think those are somewhat intimidation factors, but and people are just hoping that you do what's necessary to stop people, you know, if something bad happens. And, you know, I always say for myself, and why, one of the reasons why I do what I can to try to help people if I feel that they are in need. If I see somebody being attacked, this, that, or whatever, and I want people to do what they're capable of doing. I mean, if you don't have the capabilities and this and that to do certain things, maybe you can be that witness, gather information. So maybe you might take a picture. But so one of the things that they also said that sometimes when people videotape and the person that's committing the act, it excites them and encourages them to perform even more. And so, and this is from a psychiatrist's point of view, but those were the excuses that they gave for the actions of people videotaping or not acting because, one, they're thinking that somebody else might do something, and then the fear that they might be retaliated. And this 35-year-old man that attacked that woman, that raped that woman on the train, he had no weapon. He had no weapon. And so the police chief was, you know, said this was a horrendous act, and he couldn't believe that, you know, all these people on the train at that time did nothing to try to assist this woman. But again, she was taken to the hospital and treated for the assault. And I haven't heard anything else about her, nor have I been able to get her name. But this was an incident that took place back in October of 2021. And so we haven't been able to get her information. But again, I just looked at it as being something that probably happened to, you know, a black female. Because I just said that how people are so desensitized when things happen with us. And I don't think that they would watch a black man raping a white woman or something. I think somebody would at least call the police or something like that. But the simple fact that, what is this world coming to? What's the attitude of the people that they could sit and they can watch something happen to a young lady, I don't know if she was a minor. She could have been a minor. And that could be a reason why they didn't put her information out. But at the same time, if she was a minor, I think they would have added another charge that would have indicated that. So that's one of the only reasons why it doesn't lead me to believe that that was the case. But, you know, this is what happened. And so what are we doing to try to help people in these situations? And why aren't we doing this? Are we that afraid to help our own people? So, I mean, and this is not a first-time incident. You know, when you think about the George Floyd incident, there were hundreds of people out there in Minneapolis. And there was an MMA fighter, mixed martial arts fighter, a black young man that was telling that Officer Chauvin that had his knee on his neck said, "Hey, you're doing a blood choke. That's a blood choke. You know what you're doing. You're killing him. You need to get off of him." But he did nothing. And the other officer just stood around, didn't do anything. you know. And they weren't really going at the crowd or anything. They just kind of stood, not like they weren't paying attention to the act of Chauvin with his knee on George Floyd's neck. And then there was an EMT, a white female, that said, "Hey, that's a blood choke. You can't be doing it. You're going to kill him." She told him that. And one of the things I've noticed, you know, with police officers is when you tell them something, when you correct them, they are not going to be corrected by people that they look to as beneath them. So they disregard what you say. They're not going to take authority from anybody else because they're the authority figure. So they're not going to give their power up to you. So what do? You know, you watch somebody being murdered. You watch somebody being raped. I mean, what's it coming to? Are we more, is it self-preservation? So I can watch my brother and my sister. Somebody's doing this to my mother, to my father, you know, my child. And I'm going to watch this. I don't think that's going to happen. Not in my case. I know that I'm not going to watch this. As a matter of fact, I'm not going to watch this happen with anybody. If I happen to be there and be present, I'm going to do something, physically do something, not just talk. And, you know, there's a thing, you know, they talk about our Second Amendment rights. Second Amendment rights also gives us the right to protect not just ourselves, but others. So if we see somebody that's being violated and in need of help, we can do that. This is the Good Samaritan law. Wisconsin has that. If you see somebody in need of help, you know, whether it be medically, you know, they're choking, you want to perform the Heimlich maneuver, whatever skills you have or don't have, but you still make an attempt to try to help a person. You see somebody and they have they're bleeding from somewhere, and you grab some clothing or whatever and you put on it and you compress that wound so the blood doesn't shoot out. And if something bad happens as a result of you trying to assist, you know, you're not going to be held liable. And so that's one of the things with the Good Samaritan law in Wisconsin. But like I said, that's not the same for all states. As a matter of fact, there's several states that don't have a Good Samaritan law. So you can get in trouble for trying to help somebody in certain situations. But let me just read and see if you understand in regards to this Good Samaritan law. And I'm just going to put this information out there and see what you think. And the Good Samaritan law, court records show that a person has the right to help someone, whether it be a medical emergency, an accident, and they can assist in these situations and not be held liable if something goes wrong. Now that holds the same for a doctor unless they do something grossly wrong, you know. But that's generally not something that's not going to happen. But for a lot of reasons, that's why you find a lot of people not getting involved because, you know, they're worried about being sued, so they don't want to help. And there's always some things that you can do that probably may help. There was a situation, I'm going to have the city wrong, but there was a black male. He called the police. It was a domestic situation. This same officer had giving him a ride from the police department back to his home. And then he, this officer responded to a call of a threat to harm. And this, the same caller that was on the phone was the person that this officer had given a ride home earlier. But the point is, he's on the phone, he's calling 911, the officer shows up on the scene, and this, and he tells this guy to drop the gun, drop the weapon, drop the weapon. He's not holding the weapon, he's on the phone, and he's talking to the 911 operator, and the 911 operator hears the officer saying, drop the gun, drop the gun, and then all of a sudden he shoots. He shoots this guy several times. He shoots him several times. And then he sees that the guy didn't have a gun. He had nothing but a phone. But this officer then performs CPR. And this young man lived. This man, young man lived. And so there's something to be said about people assisting in situations, because you hear about so many incidents and you see the videos, even when people of color are shot and officers are on the scene and they're not rendering any aid to that person. And so why is it so different for the black and brown people when these type of things happen that we don't receive assistance in these situations and scenarios? And so we need to really look into that and be prepared to, you know, have these skills, you know, learn triage. That should be something, because we live in a society where gunshot wounds and injuries for people, I mean, it's just so common in a lot of these black and brown neighborhoods. And if the police aren't going to render aid and you happen to be there, you can go ahead and start chest compressions or whatever it is that you feel you need to do under the circumstances. And the law protects you in those situations. And so that is something I think that we need to look at. But, you know, what puts you in a situation where you feel that, or seem to be so desensitized that you can watch something bad, something that horrific happen to somebody and not get involved? You can watch a person being sexually assaulted on a train. And, I mean, being raped. And you got people videotaping this. And this went on for several minutes. So this wasn't like 2 minutes and done. This went on for several minutes. And so the agony, and but just here's this girl thinking that somebody's going to be helping her. And no one reached out to help this girl. And again, this guy did not have a weapon or anything. And I don't believe he was a big person. I believe he was well under 200 pounds. And but again, nobody lifted a finger to help in this situation. And what do you think, dude? I mean, why? Why wouldn't somebody help in this situation? Now, a lot of times, and I'll just, from a parent's point of view, and as a civilian, and if I witness something, and I'm going to first talk as a civilian, and if I witness something, and because of the attitude that I have, and my attitude is supported by the acts that I do. And when I say that, I work out on a regular basis. I'm very cautious, and I'm very safety-orientated. And I also study and train in martial sciences. So I know how to protect myself, and I know how to protect others. And I got pretty good at that. So I'm very comfortable in getting involved in situations and trying to help people when they're in need. And I believe that's my calling. I've always believed that. I'll tell you a story. When I was 7 years old, seven and a half, close to 8 years old. And there was, and I was a bigger kid for my age. I was just as big as a 10 or 11 year old when I was 8 years old. But I was going to an elementary school, and there was a young girl, maybe, I think, 5 years old in kindergarten, and somebody was picking on her. And I saw this kid picking on her, and I made him leave her alone. And the girl was crying. I bent down and asked the little girl, was she okay? And her parents saw the girl crying, and they saw me. And the parents came over. The dad kicked me. I went down on the ground. And then he started hitting me, and the mom picked the little girl up, and the little girl started screaming and saying, no, he was helping me, he was helping me. And then they picked me up, and they dusted me off. And I had a bloody lip and a little bloody nose, and my sweater was torn. And I walked home. And when I got home, my parents thought I got in trouble at school again, you know, because I was, you know, and I got into a fight. But, and they just looked at me and shook their head, and I went upstairs. And I had a badge of honor on that day because I helped somebody that was in need. And that always stuck with me. But I also understood that people will sometimes they'll jump to the wrong conclusion. And that person jumped to the wrong conclusion. And they started beating on me. And then later on, they picked me up and dusted me off and kept saying that they were sorry and stuff like that. And I believe they were Hispanic. You know, there was a language barrier because I remember, you know, and it sounded that way to me when I remember that incident. And so, but that's my mentality. That's what I believe that I'm here to do. I've been involved in a number of different situations, and I've been involved with law enforcement for umpteen years. So I served on the police department. I've dealt with a lot of these situations, and I've seen things happen. Now, I've never been involved in a situation where we've charged somebody for not assisting or helping somebody that was getting beat up. Now, we have arrested somebody that did get involved in the situation and they was excessive. You know, so we tell people that you can help defend people, but if you're defending somebody by hitting them over the head with a hammer, you know, that kind of changes things quite a bit. You know, so so now you can be charged with, you know, battery, you know, assault and battery, you know, or what would be the other word? I forget. You know, it's been so long, and I was just trying to look for the term of the intensive damage that you've done to a person. But you know, that's what happened. You know, so I understand why some people don't get involved, but at the same time, you have to have a calmness about yourself, and this is so that you don't lose your cool. And you keep your wits about yourself when you're dealing with these situations. Now, we don't have good examples of that in law enforcement because there was just an incident not too long ago where you had a female officer see a command officer that was over-aggressive with a person that was handcuffed and in the car. And she grabbed that officer by his belt and said, hey, come on, back off. And he turned around, grabbed her by the throat, and put her up against the squad car. He then put his hands down on her shoulder because he realized that they're being recorded. And so he won suspension. But, you know, I thought that that was a unique situation where now you're starting to see more officers respond to other officers using unnecessary use of force on people that are already in custody. And so I think the more things like that change, you know, that you have an officer going at against another officer in regards to trying to help a citizen that is in custody but is posing no threat. And the way the law works is that if you happen to witness another officer doing committing the crime and you do nothing about it, then you can be guilty as party to a crime. So you have to do something. And that's in the books for law enforcement. Now, that's not in the books for citizens, but that's, we take an oath to do those things. So that's how we, and that's one of the reasons why we can be held accountable. But people, on the other hand, for not helping out in situations, they can't be charged for the most part. You know, sometimes I can't really think of a situation where someone's been sexually assaulted, molested, or something like that where, you know, someone has been charged. But we'll give some more conversation about this a little later. We're at the top of the hour, so I'm going to go to my first break, and we will be back shortly.
I gotta carry him. Yeah, yeah, I'ma go into this. Yeah, yeah, this is gorilla. Yeah, yeah, I'ma go get the bag. Yeah, yeah, or I'ma get the pad. Yeah, yeah, I'm so cold like, yeah.
Yeah,
I'm so dull like, yeah.
Woo.
We gon' blow like, yeah.
What I'm whipping up,
look how I'm geeking up.
I'm so pretty, I'm on Gucci. I'm so pretty,
yeah, yeah.
I'm gonna get it.
Watch me move.
This is belly.
Yeah.
On my Kodak.
Black.
Ooh, know that.
Yeah.
Ooh, get it.
Yeah.
Ooh,
get it.
Ooh,
work it.
Yeah. 100 bands, 100 bands, 100 bands. Contraband, contraband, contraband,
contraband.
I got the plug on with Hawker.
Whoa,
they gonna find you like Baka.
listening to Warriors Way Radio, where their motto is continuing the fight. Your host is Brother Kwasi Kraft. Warriors Way Radio is an affiliate of the Sankofa Historical Society, which is a part of the Black Reality Think Tank. And they are operating on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Check them out. Email them at warriorsway101@gmail.com. All of our programs are archived. Just go to www.blogtalkradio.com. Go to the search portal. Put in the Sankofa Historical Society and check out any of our programs that are there. They air every Thursday evening at 6 o'clock. Warriors Way Radio. Continuing the fight.
Family, we're back. Just want to let you know this is a call-in format. We usually open up the line right around 7 o'clock, sometimes a little sooner, depending on the situations and the conversation. But our call-in number is 516-418-5674. I repeat, 516-418-5674. And if you would like to email us with questions or comments, you can email us at warriorsway101@gmail.com. That is warriorsway101@gmail.com. Thank you. Okay. The song that was played just a few minutes ago during the break, that was Childish Gambino, This is America, by Donald Glover. Now, if you listen to the song, you know, there's a lot that he's saying. And the song, basically, the central message is about guns and the violence in America and the fact that we deal with them, and when we say them, violence, and we consume them as part of the entertainment. On one hand, and on the other hand, is part of our national conversation. And so I'm going to repeat that. You know, the central message of that song is about gun violence in America and the fact that we deal with them and consume them as part of the entertainment. On one hand, and on the other hand, is part of our national conversation. And so I gave ancestral profile. I gave it on Trevon Benjamin Martin, a 17-year-old that was killed by gun violence, which sparked a national movement and Black Lives Matter incident. And that started around the 2012. Not that we haven't had these issues go on before, but you know that was one of the big issues that sparked a lot of movement and a lot of uproar all over the country. And so when you think about the desensitivity that people have by what happens to specific people, you know, when certain things happen, I remember, what did they call that, the Central Park Five, and how they, a white woman was sexually assaulted and they targeted some black and brown people and they forced confessions out of them and locked them up, and we know the story behind that where they were all released. But the mentality and the attitude of the police department, you had our former president Donald Trump, you know, offer rewards and for the sentencing and capture of these people and wanted them to be executed and did not want them to go through the criminal justice system in regards to due process of the law. You know, basically wanted them to just be hung. I mean, and so when you think about Donald Trump and you think about his slogan, "Let's make America great again," well, you know, they say his dad was a Ku Klux Klan. And great again for them was the brutality of black and brown people and everything they did to keep us down, to take advantage of us. And so there was no justice for us in any way, shape, or form. So when you hear that and that slogan and you look at his personality and how he talked to me, I mean, it comes out. It comes out. And so we're looking at a lot of that today. But let me just talk a little bit about, you know, the sexual violence, because that's one of the things that I'm talking about and just how common that is. And so, and this is the National Sexual Violence Resource Center. And so this is where these stats come from. So one in every five women and one in every 71 men will be raped at some point in their lives. 46.4% of lesbians, 74.9% of bisexual women, and 43.3% of heterosexual women reported sexual violence other than rape during their lifetime. And while 40.2% gay men, 47.4% of bisexual men, and 20.8% of heterosexual men reported sexual violence other than rape during their lifetimes. Now, nearly 1 in 10 women have been raped by an intimate partner in her lifetime, including completed forced penetration, attempted forced penetration, or alcohol or drug facilitated completed penetration. Approximately 1 in 45 men have been made to penetrate an intimate partner during their lifetime. Now, 91% of the victims of rape and sexual assaults are female, and 9% are male. So you look at that big number and disparity in regards to 91% women, 9% male, but then you're talking also about what's being reported. And I don't think a lot of men and women, and they always say the number is usually 2 to 3 times or maybe more of the people compared to the people that come in regards to people that it actually happens to. Now, also, let's look at another aspect of these incidents. There's a cost impact in regards to a rape. They say approximately $151,423 is spent approximately on the cost of a rape. And annually, rape costs the U.S. more than any other crime. $127 billion, followed by the assaults are at $93 billion. Murder is at $71 billion. Drunk driving is at $61 billion. Now, 81% of the women and 35% of the men report significant short-term or long-term impacts such as post-traumatic stress disorder. Health care is like 16% higher for women who were sexually abused as children. Now, 1 in every 4 girls, or 1 in every 6 boys will be sexually abused by the time they turn 18 years old. Now, 34% of people who sexually abuse a child are family members. Now, 12.3% of women were aged 10 or younger at the time of their first rape or victimization. And 3% of the women were between the ages of 11 and 17. So, you know, these numbers, and when we talk about this, you know, this is letting you know that this is more common than some of us think. And if I sit down and I talk about my situation, because I can tell you when I was in elementary school, one of my teachers, a male teacher, I was very fond of, and I'm trying to think, I was in the fifth grade. And one of the things that we used to do is that on the table that did the best work throughout the school week, that teacher would come to our house and pick us up, and we would go to his house, and he would then take us somewhere. Maybe we might go to a movie, maybe we might make some projects at his house, you know, make some candles or something like that. But he had activities for us to do, and that was one of the rewards we got for being the best table that week at school. And so that was something that we did. But I remember one day I was by myself. None of the other kids could come, and it was just me and him. And I was kind of always one of his favorites. I knew that in the class, so I was okay being by myself with him. But I remember when I was with him, he gave me a hug, and then he started humping me, you know, and then he took out a, he had a, what do you call that, not a vice grip, but a, I don't know what you call those things that you, a vice, it's a mounted tool that you can put something in between and tighten it, but he had one of those in his garage, and he took a little stick, and then he started rubbing it between his hands, and he was telling me I should do that with my private part in between my legs, and girls are going to make me feel good one day. And he was just telling me how good that would feel. And, you know, and I didn't know what to think. I didn't understand basically what he was saying. You know, I'm a fifth grader, and I have a teacher that I look up to, and all of a sudden he's telling me all these weird things. You know, and these are certainly not things that I had a conversation with my parents about, but yet I have a teacher that my parents trust me to be with, and I actually never shared that with my parents. I never told them that. But at the same time, when I'm looking at these stats, and they talk about sexual abuse, and they said 1 in 4 girls, 1 in 6 boys will be sexually abused by the time they turn 18. Well, I certainly wasn't 18, and I was involved in not just that situation, but another situation where I was sexually assaulted. And in both times, I think the second time, I was in junior high school. But so one in elementary and one in junior high school. And from that point on, you know, it was different. You know, I was a bigger kid. I understood better. And I was sharper and stuff like that. But at the same time, when you look at those situations and you look at people, how they target and how they look at people, like, so this girl on this bus, you know, did she scream? I didn't hear any reports that this girl was screaming. All I heard is that she was trying to fight him, and he tore her clothes off, and he raped her. And you didn't hear any reports of her screaming and asking. I think she might have been, I think she did, I think they did indicate that she was asking for help, but again, nobody helped her. And one of the reports, the officer, and somebody indicated that the officer or the chief had kind of blew some things out of proportion, indicating that people just stood there and videotaped, and that may and may not have happened like that, the way he put it out there. But the point is this. People get profiled and get targeted as a victim. And so, and one of the things that people do when they, you know, they take advantage of a certain person because they're very naive, because they may have a mental and physical disability or some type of illness, or they believe again that that person is lacking somewhere. That person doesn't appear to have confidence, and it is very easy to tell when somebody just doesn't look like they fit in, and that person is targeted. You know, when you can go in a playground and you can watch kids out there playing, and you're going to find some kid that's just kind of off by themselves. And one of the things they always tell you, you know, try to stay close to the group, because if you get off by yourself, somebody can snatch you up and do this or do that, and nobody's going to really notice that you're gone. So we want you to stay close, in a close proximity. And because your teachers, you know, they usually step back so that they can just see the whole picture. But a lot of times things happen and they get involved and engage with the kids. And so they're in that inner circle. And if there's not enough of them out there and somebody else appears, then they take off with some people. And have we had those kind of incidents happen where kids were taken off to school grounds, or kids walked off to the school grounds and got lost, are picked up by somebody and maybe later returned or even walked home? And so we're in a point where we need to always, we've always had these things where we needed to have protect and look out for each other. But one of the things that we need to do is we need to develop some skills, a skill set. You know, just like a job. You know, there are certain things that you need to be able to do to teach. You need to read. You need to learn specifically about different skills so that you can, you know, maybe you're an electrician. Maybe you're into math or different sciences or nursing. There's different things that you need to learn and get good at, and you practice. And as you practice these things, it becomes easier for you to do it when you're challenged to do these things. It's not that difficult. It is the same thing when it comes down to your personal safety. There are some people that they welcome challenges where they have to deal with, and you know, you always hear somebody, I wish they would. And that's because they are more than able and capable of handling themselves. And not that they look for certain things to happen, but they're very confident. And generally, those things don't happen to confident people. You know, people generally look at somebody and they look at people that they feel they can take advantage of. Even if you're an older person, and you don't seem to be in the best of health, but if you're a person that where your eyes and ears are in tune to what's going on, and they see that you're watching, and so you're not going to probably be that target, even though you're older. But sometimes you might. And we've had older people surprise younger people and people that look to take advantage of them in these situations. But again, you know, when we talk about this assault that took place on this train, and it was, I don't know that it was even a national story. You know, I heard about it, but, you know, it wasn't blown up so much. So, like I said, I'm still trying to find the identity of the person that was sexually assaulted. I don't necessarily have to know their name. I'm just thinking that, you know, because the desensitivity in regards to what happened and why it wasn't such an uproar. I'm thinking that the person was not a white female, because things are just so different for black and brown people. And when things happen to somebody, that there's a difference how things are handled. There is a difference. I know that from working the job in law enforcement and from the things that I see today. And when you talk about people that are missing, and if I go with another statistic, when they talk about African-American women, they are the highest percentage of people to be sexually assaulted. And most of them, are the assaults are from people that they know. A smaller percentage is by strangers, but most of these assaults are by people that they know. So African-Americans are like number one in regards to sexual assault. Then the next category would be Hispanic. Then it would be American Indian. And then Alaskan, and then white females. So white females are the least out of all of those people that are victimized in regards to, you know, sexual assaults, rapes, and things of that nature, sexual violence. And so why is that a big difference? You know, the black, sometimes I think about black women, and I, you know, they seem like they're more capable and able in a lot of situations, you know, that they can handle themselves. But again, if they're being abused by, you know, and the numbers indicate that most of the people that they're abused by are people that they know. You know, I think it's more than 60%, close to 70% of the people that assault them are usually people that they know. And so that really said something about those situations. So you have people that, you know, you may not be intimate with them. They know you from, maybe they've seen you at school, they live in your neighborhood, but they have some type of contact with you where they see you around, and they target you. They pick a time and place. You know, they get to see the lights on and not on in your house. They can don't see a car. So you have to do things a different way to try to set yourself up where you're not that predictable. You know, like a lot of times you come home from school, you know, I used to do a different way every now and then. And I did that for a number of different people. When I was a little kid, you know, we used to get our lunch money taken from us. We used to get chased sometimes. You know, so it was survival. And you had to learn how to do things a little different. You might have to take a longer way here or there, but that saved you some lunch money or saved you from getting beat up. So, I mean, what do we do? How do we stop this violence? You know, it's a change of mindset. You know, is the religion a big part of that? You know, love thy brother. You know, what is putting our minds to the point where we're doing these type of things? You know, I can go back 30 years ago, and you think about a lot of these incidents that happened, you know, a lot of the killings. I mean, there has been a big change and shift in how we do things. And I think one of the reasons is that as black and brown people, I think we have been assimilated into the European way of doing things. And so when I say that, when we were colonized, and we can go back and, you know, and we were brought out of Africa, and we were brought here as hostages, and they robbed us of our language, of our religion, and family, and all those different things they did. And then they villainized us as being, you know, evil people. And they were the most torturous people to us. I mean, they would behead us. They did all type of different things to us and to other people that looked like them for profit. And so when you look at all this, the things that have been going on, and then you think about the sexual violence, and we had some good teachers. But at the same time, I'm going to say it took some time, because I can say back in the 70s, and even to this day when they talk about serial killers, you know, 80% of them are white males. That's what the numbers say. But now when we look at a lot of the things that go on, you know, about 30 years ago, something bad happened and people got killed, a bunch of people died in a school or on the street. You already knew it was some white guy that did this. I mean, that was just the common thing that happened. That's just what we believe when these mass incidents, shootings and killings and things like this happen. But now, you don't know who it is. You can't say who it is. And so, you know, we had the incident in Wisconsin where, you know, a guy ran over a bunch of people and, you know, killed over a dozen people, and other people are, you know, are with injuries that are probably going to be crippled for the rest of their life. But again, that was an incident and that, you know, shocked a lot of people, you know, where someone drove violently for no apparent reason other than their own paranoia and ran over a lot of people at a parade during the holiday season. And so when you look at those things and what we've been through and how things have started to shift a little bit, you know, whereas we're not thinking with our African mind. We don't know our African mind. We don't know a lot about you know, because I think they say, and I've read that 95% of the books, the education that we're getting is geared from European viewpoints. And so, like I said, so we have kind of been assimilated into these situations, and we're not even trying to know and find out, you know, about our Africanness, our history, the truth about who we are as a people. You know, we always talk about we come from greatness and from kings and queens and so on. And but yet we want to go to England and worship, you know, the queen there. I want to go to Paris. I want to go here and there. And, you know, they stole all of our precious jewelry and ancient artifacts, and they're still not giving that back. You know, all the sanctions they put on Haiti and Africa for what? For not wanting to be colonized and for fighting back. You know, and bullying us because we don't have nuclear power. You know, and so these are the things that we're dealing with, but then we're being villainized as, you know, bad people. You know, we're the worst of the worst. You know, I was talking to somebody about crime stats, and I talked about, and I just want to throw this out there, and the reason why I say this is just that I want people to understand that the information that we get, and most of it that we get, is designed to get us to think a certain way, and so that we don't come together and look at each other as a good resource. I mean, we look at each other in fear. And as long as we continue to do that, you know, they're going to be able to maintain control and a type of advantage. Because again, we do not want to engage with each other than, you know, for profit, you know, and that's what they do, you know. Money over people all day long. You know, you got so many people killing people for what? Property. You know, and You know, and that's we're dealing with so much of that because, like I said, we don't know our identity. And so when you look at a lot of these things that happen, I don't know what the status is on the man that raped the 35-year-old. They said he was released, but they didn't indicate that he was deported even after this rape. And so he may have some bail might have been posted, but like I said, they didn't indicate that information. They didn't put that out there. But again, how does something like that happen on a public train? And you got people on there, and you know, you feel safe. You're supposed to feel safe when you get on public transportation. But yet a person, a girl, could be raped with passengers on the bus, several passengers on the bus. Nobody felt that they needed to say or do anything to render aid to this young lady. And so, and I can't think if that the person that did call, I think it was the operator of the train, and it was a female, I believe it was. And I know that as a city bus driver, and I'm talking about in the Milwaukee area, they could possibly lose their job if something happened on their bus and they got involved with a passenger that created a problem. They basically don't want you to do anything, and they want you to call the police. And they, as a matter of fact, they have an area where you sit. They have a like a glass barrier or cage-like area so that people can't get to you, so that you would be safe behind that area. So they want you to basically stay in a safe spot, and if something does go on, you call and report it. And that's what that bus train conductor did in this incident. They called and they reported the incident. But again, you know, me, myself, I couldn't watch something like that happen and not do something. But at the same time, I understand why other people wouldn't do anything. I'm not going to tell some person that has a lot of health issues and problems to try to physically restrain or stop somebody from doing something. But again, I don't even know if somebody yelled at them, hey, stop this, do this. I mean, none of that conversation was said. And I've heard a number of different videos in regards to this on YouTube and just looking at the report. But again, like I said, I want to try to see what the nationality of the girl. Not that it makes a difference in regards to the tragic thing that happened, but I think it may make a difference in regards to why people saw what happened and did not render aid or try to assist or stop this person. Because I said, again, this person had no weapon. I don't know if it was all women passengers, any men passengers that saw this, you know, or were they enjoying this as entertainment? Because a lot of times, you know, they say that people, they look at, you know, these violent acts as entertainment. I was watching, I don't know if you saw, see this, it's a thing that they do on TV where they, it's called 60 Days In, where they will take a congressional officer or regular citizen, and they will have them go in as a convicted person, and they would give them certain codes that they would do if they needed help, you know, put their hand on their chest, and that's a sign that they're done. They don't want to be in the program anymore. But other than that, there's another couple other signs they put their hands up a certain way, meaning that they're okay. You know, like if they put their hands in a praying position and stuff like that, you know, maybe they've got some information they want to share with correctional people. Because the people that work there, the other correctional people, they don't know that these people are undercover. And so in this program, one of the things that they're looking to do is they're looking to find out the abuse that goes on from the officers and how well they do their job and the actions that go on, because there's a lot of drug trafficking that goes on through there. There's a lot of sexual abuse that goes on in there. There's a lot of abuse by the guards, not doing their job and taking advantage of people. And so they're trying to clean up this correctional system, and so they have these people volunteer to go undercover and do that. And so it's called 60 Days In. Sometimes people make it, and sometimes people think they can make it and they want to make a difference. Some people are former police officers, and they go in there and they can't handle it. And so it's an interesting thing, but it's something that people do because they're trying to get into a situation where they can go in, have somebody go in undercover, and give them some information as to how they can do their job better. And so they had this one correctional officer. He went in, and he basically took on the identity of a pod leader. And he was having inmates basically do his bidding. He had his roommate do everything for him. He even had his roommate steal for him, and he ended up getting put in the hole for that. But the point is, those are the things that they try to do to try to make things better. You know, like even on these bus situations and train situations, they have undercover officers sit on the bus to try to observe and see what's going on. And if something pops up, you know, okay, this is how we're going to deal with it. And so there's always, and they call these different sting operations, you know, where they set things up and they have officers go in there to try to clean up some type of problem that's going on. But again, the news reporter that talked about this incident, she talked about a number of reasons why, you know, this thing happened on this bus. She was saying, you know, the violence that seems to be tolerated in the community and you know, and the sexual assault that happened on the bus. The lady also talked about, and when I'm talking to the lady, the news anchor person, when she was reporting it, and she talked about the psychiatrist statement. And, you know, one of the reasons why people probably didn't intervene was because, you know, they felt somebody else was going to intervene, or they were scared of retaliation. You know, and, you know, so there could be, like I said, a number of different reasons. And maybe they don't physically, maybe everybody that was on that bus was not physically capable of, or felt that they weren't physically capable of doing something. But from a few of the pictures I saw, I think they purposely kind of blurred the pictures and stuff. Some of these people, you know, had some decent size to them. I don't know how many women there were, how many men there were on that bus, but that train on that incident. But it's just a difficult thing, I think, for somebody to see somebody in need like that. And you always hear these people talk about staying your ground. You know, you got the Kyle Richter situation where he said he was attacked. You know, he's walking around with an AR-15 looking to use it. George Zimmerman had a gun looking to use it. And, you know, disregards the orders of the police that tell him, don't get out of the vehicle, don't pursue after this guy. But then he pursues after this young man, and this young man sees that he's following him, and he's trying to avoid this guy. And Zimmerman pursues him and attacks him and kills him. And this kid, during the confrontation, he fights back because he sees that this guy got a gun and he wants to use it. And then later on, he makes $250,000 selling the gun that he killed Trayvon Martin with, and the amount of money that he got from all these people wanting to buy this gun. You know, the one person wanted $150,000. They wanted to, for their kid, their young kid. A lady wanted it for a young kid as a present. Then Zimmerman reneged on that and sold it to somebody else for $250,000. And what did he do with some of the money? He said in good faith he's going to give the money to the police department like they need it. But what was the reason why he's giving it to them? To help prevent violence against police officers. So I think that's buying him some more points. You know, but Zimmerman himself was arrested for domestic abuse. And his girlfriend at the time, she ended up dropping, I think, all the charges against him. But you know he had a history of problems. But again, that didn't come up. And like I said, they really tried to villainize the 17-year-old Trayvon Benjamin Martin. You know, a good kid. You know, wanted to be a pilot. He was just a good kid, and going to the store and never came back. You know, killed. Father wondering what happened to his son. Son is there visiting and stuff, and son gets killed because, you know, of the action of this evil man. Lady gets raped on the bus, and no one sees fit to help her. You know, and that's just an ugly situation in itself that, you know, we can witness these type of events. And what is this world coming to that we can't seem to help somebody in these situations? I can tell you right now, if I was on that train, I would have did something. If I was around when this officer was on George Floyd's neck, I would have did something. Now, you might look and say, well, I mean, there, no. I mean, because I understand right and wrong, and I'm confident in me trying to help somebody, then I'll be okay. Now, do I understand some officers would just shoot me just like that? Yeah. You know, but, you know, I understand and I prepare myself to deal with situations if need be. So I'm okay. You know, because, you know, there's two sides and to every story. And the side that, you know, law enforcement wants you to believe, for the most part, we find too many times often that they're not telling the truth. But we also find out that the truth doesn't matter. You know, it's not the truth that matters in law enforcement. It's about what they can get away with. And so, again, this incident on the train, this guy, he didn't necessarily, well, yeah, he got, like, the police showed up, and they basically caught him in the act of doing it. You know, so he didn't just stop when they got there. He was still in the act of doing it. And, you know, one of the things that encourages people to do things, like I said, if they feel that they have an audience, and like I said, this was a homeless person, you know, clearly he had some mental health issues to do something like that on a train or anywhere, because that's just not a common thing that you see people do. And so anytime somebody does something extremely out of the norm, you know, there's usually some type of mental health issue involved in that situation. But what kind of mental health issue would it be for, I mean, for the people that could sit there and watch it? I think there's a problem with that. I most definitely couldn't sit there and watch somebody do something like that and do nothing. But, you know, that's one of the things that happened. And, you know, we have to try to do better. I think that we should all learn something or carry something that we can use to protect ourselves and protect others as need be. We know that we live in some trying times, difficult times, that all type of things happen that we don't have any control of at different times, but that still doesn't mean that we can't show some compassion towards other people's problems and things that they're going through and reach out and help them. So I guess I'm wondering, like I said, you know, what is it that you see in a person that freezes you from not doing something? You know, is it fear? You know, or do you just not care? You know, like when some of the comments again was that, you know, some people didn't do anything because they thought somebody else was. But clearly, after a certain amount of time, and you're seeing what's going on, how do you watch it? How do you turn your head, like, hoping that this is going to just stop? You know, so I'm going to have to try and gather more information, but as far as the information that I received, and like I said, this was an incident that happened in October. They didn't put a whole lot of information out there. There were a whole lot of stories talking about it. They basically kind of repeated the same thing in regards to the officers getting there, and so they basically caught him in the act of doing, and so he was taken into custody right away, and she was taken to a hospital, and they performed a sexual assault treatment on her, and, you know, questioned her and all that other information. And then the chief of police admonished some of the past, but at the same time, there was nothing that he could really do. There was some talk saying that he could probably charge them with contributing to a crime, but again, in Philadelphia, they do not have a good Samaritan law. And so I think under those circumstances that, you know, it's a hard, they said that it would be a very difficult thing to try to convict somebody for not helping somebody in need. And this young lady was certainly in need in this situation. But again, there were people that did not come to rescue her or show any support for helping her deal with, you know, this crazed person that was on the train. And so fortunately, you know, the police showed up. I just can't imagine, you know, like I said, this went on for several minutes, you know, on the train, and this is going on, and people are just standing there. And it's not like they're moving and going somewhere else. I mean, they're basically right where they are, and they could do something. And I was sure this young lady felt that no way that this was going to happen, that somebody was going to intervene and do something. And when people did nothing, how did that make her feel? What's the psychological damage going to be for her, you know, to go back on the train or anywhere else with a crowd full of people? And you're thinking, a lot of people tell you, go to a place where there's a lot of people because you'll be safe. Nobody's not going to do it in front of a bunch of people. And there are enough people on this train where this shouldn't have happened, but it did. So we're living in some different times. And we're living where people just seem to not care so much about other people, and, you know, and that's what we're doing. So hopefully, you know, people, you know, prepare themselves better so that when things do happen, they can protect themselves. And maybe other people might intervene and help out. So I'm going to close this program out. We didn't get any calls in regards to this conversation, but that's okay. So hopefully we'll revisit this situation some other time. I thank you guys for joining me tonight, and we look forward to seeing you again on next Thursday on Warriors Way, continuing the fight. If you do have any questions or comments, you can email me at warriorsway101@gmail.com. warriorsway101@gmail.com. All right. Thank you very much for tuning in tonight. And we will be closing out the song, Glory.
When the glory comes, it will be out. When the war is won, we will be sure, we will be sure. Oh, glory,
glory, glory, glory, glory,
oh,
glory, glory.
Hands to the heavens, no man, no weapon formed against, yes, glory is destined. Everyday women and men become legends. Sins that go against our skin become blessings. The movement is a rhythm to us. Freedom is like religion to us. Justice is juxtaposition in us. Justice for all just ain't specific enough. One son died, his spirit is revisiting us. True and living, living in us. Resistance is us. That's why Rosa sat on the bus. That's why we walk through Ferguson with our hands up. When it go down, we woman and man up. They say stay down, and we stand up. Shots be on the ground, the camera panned up. King pointed to the mountaintop, and we ran up.
One day, when the glory comes, it will be out. It will be out. Oh,
glory.
Every man, woman, and child. Even Jesus got his crown in front of a crowd. They march with the torch, we gon' run with it now. Never look back, we done gone hundreds of miles. From dark roads, heroes, to become a hero. Facing the league of justice, his power was the people. Enemy is lethal, a king became regal. Saw the face of Jim Crow under a bald ego. No one can win the war individually. It takes the wisdom of the elders and young people's energy. Welcome to the story we call victory, the coming of the Lord. My eyes have seen the glory.
One day,